For centuries, legends told of the spice that came from a giant bird's nest perched high on unreachable cliffs. Traders swore it was so perilous to obtain that its price rivaled the most precious treasures on Earth. In ancient Egypt, priests used it to prepare the dead for eternity, colonial powers went to war over it, and if you've got it sitting in your kitchen, chances are you've been duped by an imposter. I'm Megan Braham, and on this episode of The History of Plants, we're unraveling the story of cinnamon, a spice so prized it rewrote global trade, stoked centuries of conflict, and quietly rebranded itself in your pantry. Its story is full of smuggling, substitution, and a scent that once built empires. But before all of that, cinnamon's story started with something much stranger. Part 1, lovers, life force, and large birds. The story of cinnamon doesn't begin with cinnamon rolls or pumpkin spice lattes, but deep in our planet's past. Cinnamon is part of the laurel family, Lauraceae, making it a cousin to plants like camphor, bay leaves, and even avocado. The tree's ancestors are ancient, first appearing in the Cretaceous period, which made them contemporaries of the last dinosaurs. Cinnamon flourished and spread around the globe during a sweltering tropical period known as the Eocene Epoch. And we know this because of incredible fossil evidence left behind. Paleobotanists have unearthed exquisitely preserved, fossilized cinnamon leaves and branches in France, showing that vast cinnamon forests once grew in the heart of Europe, thousands of miles from their modern homes in tropical Asia. Imagine tossing some prehistoric cinnamon bark into your banana bread. I wonder what would happen. Moving on. Its entry into the human story was marked by a reverence reserved for the divine. In ancient China, a form of cinnamon known as cassia, or rogue, a cousin of true cinnamon, more on that later, was a fundamental medicine used to activate a person's life force. In ancient Egypt, it was an essential ingredient for embalming the dead. In Greek mythology, it was woven into the legend of the phoenix, the mythical bird said to build its nest from cinnamon and other precious spices. The nest bursts into flame, becoming the phoenix's funeral pyre from which the bird is reborn, probably smelling like cinnamon. And in the book of Exodus 30:22-30, God lists it as a direct command to Moses for creating a holy anointing oil to concentrate the Ark of the Covenant. Quote, "The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, also take for yourself quality spices, 500 shekels of liquid myrrh, half as much sweet-smelling cinnamon, 250 shekels, 250 shekels of sweet-smelling cane, 500 shekels of cassia, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, and a hin of olive oil. And you shall make from these a holy anointing oil, an ointment compounded according to the art of the perfumer. It shall be a holy anointing oil, and with it you shall anoint the tabernacle of meeting and the ark of the testimony, the table and all its utensils, the lampstand and its utensils, and the altar of incense, the altar of burnt offering with all its utensils, and the laver and base. You shall then consecrate them, that they may be the most holy. Whatever touches them must be holy." And it wasn't only used for the sacred. The Hebrew Bible also describes it as an intoxicating perfume. In the Fourth Song of Solomon, it's listed as one of the most precious spices of the beloved. Quote, "My sister, my bride, you are a garden locked up, a spring enclosed, a fountain sealed. Your branches are an orchard of pomegranates with the choicest of fruits, with henna and spikenard, with spikenard and saffron, with calamus and cinnamon, with every kind of incense tree, with myrrh and aloes, and the finest of spices. With all the finest spices, you are a garden spring, a well of fresh water flowing down from Lebanon." And in Proverbs, a temptress uses it to scent her bed. Quote, "I have decked my bed with coverings, with colored linen from Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, with aloes, and with cinnamon. Come, let us fill our love till morning. Let us delight in loving caresses." This is the dual nature of cinnamon in the ancient world. It was the scent of both the holy tabernacle and the lover's bedroom. A spice associated with life, divinity, desire, you name it, cinnamon was important to it. From the very beginning, this was a substance of immense power and value. The Roman historian Pliny the Elder recorded that a single pound of the finest cinnamon could cost up to 1,500 denarii, the equivalent of 5 years' wages for a common laborer. There's also a legend that the Emperor Nero burned an entire year's supply of Rome's cinnamon on his wife's funeral pyre, which would have been an unimaginable act of extravagance. The people who wrote about Nero weren't his biggest fans, so we can't take all of that at its word, but maybe he did. The point is that cinnamon's incredible value hinged on a single, fiercely guarded commercial secret protected for centuries by one of history's most brilliant disinformation campaigns. The gatekeepers were the Arab traders who controlled the spice routes. To protect both their monopoly and justify the astronomical prices, they didn't just hide the truth about cinnamon's origin, they replaced it with the most fantastical tales of peril, transforming a simple agricultural product into something that sounds right out of Tolkien-esque fiction. The most famous myth, the legend of the Cinnamalagus, or the cinnamon bird. The story, which is immortalized by Greek historian Herodotus in Book 3 of the Histories, claimed that cinnamon wasn't harvested from trees, but stolen from the nests of massive, ferocious birds in the far reaches of Arabia. These mythical birds would fly to some secret land, gather cinnamon sticks, and cement them to cliff faces with mud. To retrieve it, traders would leave out heavy ox carcasses. The birds, greedy and not so bright, would attempt to carry off the meat, but end up breaking their nests in the process, sending the precious cinnamon tumbling to the ground. Then the traders, heroic, obviously, would swoop in and claim the prize. It was a ridiculous, brilliant story, one that turned cinnamon into a sacred trial and justified the sky-high price. And hey, if this is your first time here, uncovering these kind of closely guarded myths and forgotten plant stories is what we do on this channel. So if botany and history are some of your favorite rabbit holes, now's the time to hit subscribe. But this tale of the cinnamon bird was just one of many. Aristotle and Pliny the Elder repeated variations involving deep swampy glens guarded by venomous flying serpents or bat-like beasts. All of these were designed to do one thing: hide the truth. That cinnamon came not from mythical terrains, but the forests of Sri Lanka and southern China. But look, I don't want to paint the wrong impression here that everyone was so gullible or naive to believe these stories. Ancient Greeks and Romans who were educated knew these were just tall tales. So it was more like, nodding politely while your drunk uncle rambles on at Thanksgiving about what he read on Facebook about what millennials are destroying now, rather than believing it to be true. But there was no definitive proof otherwise, and so the myth of the cinnamon bird was far too captivating to die. For 1,500 years, the story proved to be more powerful and far more profitable than the truth. Part 2, the Cinnamon Wars. As the ancient world gave way to the medieval period, the reverence for cinnamon transformed into an insatiable global hunger. The spice that had once been a sacred offering became the catalyst for a new world order, one defined by long-distance trade, ruthless ambition, and violent colonial conquest. For centuries, the supply chain was a complicated, multi-ethnic relay race. Cinnamon moved from Southeast Asia to India into the hands of Arab traders who would then bring it to Egypt, and from there into the eager clutches of the European markets. By the 15th century, the Italian city of Venice had secured a near-total monopoly on cinnamon imports, and they charged accordingly. This monopoly funded the splendor of the Venetian Republic during the height of the Renaissance. While it was Venetian merchants controlling the docks, the operation was bankrolled by banking dynasties like the Medici, who became fabulously rich by funding the luxury goods market. I want to stop there for a second and emphasize something. Because what's wild is that, in a roundabout way, it was cinnamon that helped create the Renaissance. The wealth it generated was used to bankroll commissions from artists like Michelangelo or Da Vinci. So, next time you make some cinnamon toast, remember that it's not just delicious. It's also got a legacy of ambition, empire, and one of the earliest global monopolies. Honestly, that might be more inspiring than whatever hustle bro advice is trending on LinkedIn. Getting back to the story, the Venetian stranglehold became the direct trigger for the Age of Discovery. In 1497, the Portuguese crown was sick of paying Venice's sky-high prices, so they sent explorer Vasco da Gama on a mission to find a sea route to the spiced lands of the east. You're probably thinking, well, just sail around Africa. That's not that complicated. But at the time, European explorers had only crept down the African coast, and most turned back around the Cape of Good Hope, either as terrified, shipwrecked, or mutinied in retreat. It was so famously treacherous that Christopher Columbus figured it might actually be easier to go west, and we know how that turned out. But da Gama actually made it. After nearly a year at sea, he reached the western coast of India in May 1498, and then promptly bungled it in spectacular fashion. He arrived in Calicut, which is modern-day Kosikod, expecting a hero's welcome. But the goods he brought were not exactly tribute material that would justify a hero's welcome. The Zamorin, who was ruler of the region, was used to Arab traders arriving with gold and jewels and luxurious wares. Da Gama showed up with coral beads and wash basins and cloth. The court was so insulted by these trivial items because they viewed them as something like a petty street merchant might offer, and took it as an insulting gesture from an emissary who claimed to be representing a great king in a faraway land. Making matters worse, the established Arab traders who controlled the port immediately recognized the Portuguese as a threat to their centuries-old monopoly. So they used their influence to poison the court against da Gama, essentially painting all Europeans as nothing more than pirates. Caught between a powerful ruler he had offended and hostile merchants who wanted him gone, da Gama found it nearly impossible to trade. After only 3 tense months, he was forced to leave for his own safety, taking it to the extreme by actually taking hostages onto the ship to ensure his safe passage. The mission was a disaster. But navigationally, it was a world-changing triumph. When Da Gama returned to Portugal in September 1499, a handful of spices he was able to bring back sold for a massive profit. The Venetians had been cut out, and the Cinnamon Wars were officially on. Very quickly after Da Gama's return, the Portuguese crown began sending large annual naval fleets, known as the Portuguese India Armadas, to secure their dominance in the spice trade. In 1505, a fleet led by Dom Lourenço de Almeida was blown, of course, due to a storm. They ended up surviving and landed on a tropical island they hadn't intended to find. It was Ceylon, which is modern-day Sri Lanka. And this was the real prize, because Ceylon was home to the world's primary source of true cinnamon. To control it was to control the cinnamon trade. The Portuguese built forts on it, and by the late 1500s, had seized control of the island. But their monopoly didn't last long. By the 1600s, a new and even more terrifying power emerged, the Dutch East India Company, also known as the VOC, which is the acronym for the company's name in Dutch. I won't embarrass myself by trying to say that, and I will just write it here.
Verenigde Oost-Indische Compagnie.
But roughly, it translates to, we're here for the loot. The VOC was essentially a state-controlled corporate empire. They built their own forts, they ran private armies, they waged actual wars, and they had one goal, which was to monopolize the spice trade. They were so committed to artificial scarcity that they would publicly burn stockpiles of cinnamon just to inflate the prices. At one point, they marked up cinnamon by 1,400%. And just to clarify, this was separate from the British East India Company, which we talked about in our Opium Poppy episode. While both were corporate behemoths, their business models were different. The British focused on territorial conquest and controlling trade of textiles, teas, and opium. The Dutch were more interested in controlling the products themselves, and they didn't care how bloody it got. To give you some understanding of their brutality, I want to briefly go on a side quest and talk about nutmeg. At one time, there was only one place on Earth where nutmeg grew, the Banda Islands, which is a tiny archipelago in Indonesia. In 1621, when the islanders resisted the VOC's monopoly and dared to trade with the English, Dutch naval officer Jan Pieterszoon Koen ordered the massacre and enslavement of nearly the entire population just to secure the nutmeg groves. While the Dutch monopoly was eventually broken and nutmeg trees were transported across the globe, the Banda Islands themselves never fully recovered from the genocide, and the original Bandanese culture was effectively erased from history. This was the ruthless corporate strategy they were now bringing to the cinnamon trade. By 1658, the Dutch East India Company had such a stranglehold on the cinnamon market that they were able to systematically dismantle the Portuguese presence in Ceylon and seize absolute control. This new era of corporate power, built on the profits of a simple spice, marked a brutal turning point in world history. For the first time, global conflict wasn't just about the ambitions of kings. It was about the bottom line on a corporate balance sheet, and enforced with a level of violence that would equate to any government army you want to think of. The battles for cinnamon established a new and ruthless model for how the world would work. And this immense corporate-driven wealth actually reshaped Dutch society, which you can see in the complicated legacy of their art. During the Dutch Golden Age, the wealth from spices completely transformed art. In paintings like Almonds, Oysters, Sweets, Chestnuts, and Wine by Osias the Elder Bayer, or Still Life with a Turkey Pie by Peter Klaus, you'll find cinnamon prominently featured as candied sticks or powdered spice laid out on opulent table settings. But these weren't just like Pinterest-worthy spreads. They were painted in the Vanitas tradition, which is a genre of memento mori. Essentially, it uses luxury and opulence in still lifes to warn viewers of life's fleeting nature. In these images, cinnamon becomes both a symbol of success and a warning about the cost of that success. Because the price of cinnamon was never just gold. It was conquest, bloodshed, and erasure of entire cultures. The Cinnamon Wars didn't just reshape economies, they redrew the map of the entire world. Part 3, The Great Imposter. One thing to understand about cinnamon is that its true secret wasn't just its location, it was its preparation. Harvesting high-quality Ceylon cinnamon is a delicate, highly specialized craft that has remained almost unchanged for centuries. It involves skillfully peeling away the rough outer bark to get the paper-thin, fragrant inner layer, which is then carefully dried into quills. This isn't just hard, it's pretty much an art form, and it can take a new peeler 5 to 7 years just to master the technique. Even now, no machine has been able to replicate it. For centuries, that secret process was held by a single community, the Salagama caste of Sri Lanka. Under pre-colonial kings, their difficult and dangerous work was seen as an honored service. But when the Portuguese and later the Dutch East India Company arrived, they hijacked the system of expert labor and twisted it into a mechanism of brutal exploitation. The peelers were subjected to horrific punishments if they failed to meet quotas, and what was seen as a traditional duty was transformed into a form of slavery, all to feed an insatiable European market. The simmering unrest eventually did boil over into open rebellion, culminating in a war between the cinnamon peelers and the powerful VOC that raged for 6 years. The conflict ultimately ended not with a victory, but with the arrival of yet another colonial power when the British took control of Ceylon in 1796. And as the old monopolies crumbled and the spice trade expanded into a global mass market, something subtler began to take over. Fraud. The word cinnamon on a spice jar often conceals a complex botanical and commercial reality. The product most of us, particularly North America, know and use as cinnamon isn't true cinnamon. It's a cheaper, more abundant relative called cassia. True cinnamon, or Ceylon cinnamon, comes from the species Cinnamomum virum and is native to Sri Lanka. Its quills are pale brown and form from many paper-thin, fragile layers that crumble easily. Its flavor is described as delicate, sweet, and complex. Cassia, on the other hand, comes from a few different species, like Cinnamomum cassia, Cinnamomum burmani, and Cinnamomum lobreroi. Its sticks are dark reddish-brown, made of a single, thick, woody layer, and its flavor is the bold and spicy taste we associate with cinnamon rolls. And that boldness and that price tag is why cassia became the standard for the American spice industry. Major spice companies that built the modern market, like McCormick, did so by providing affordable and consistent products. And this cheaper, punchier cassia fit that model perfectly. It still said cinnamon on the label, and that's all most people cared about. For the record, the FDA has long permitted this labeling, partially due to historical precedent and partly because they consider both spices generally recognized as safe in normal culinary amounts. As a result, cassia's flavor profile became the dominant and expected taste for cinnamon in North America. But this market swap isn't just about taste preference, because it's also a potential health issue. Cassia is rich in a compound called coumarin, which is a known hepatotoxin that can be toxic to the liver in high doses. And that's not even the worst of it. In 2023 and 2024, health authorities discovered that some processors were intentionally adding lead chromate, a toxic pigment, to ground cassia to enhance its color and increase weight. Let me emphasize, it was not an accident or a mistake. It was fraud. Because you see, spices are sold by weight instead of volume, so the more a jar weighs, the more profit they make. The levels were so high that New York, the first state to control heavy metals in spices, enacted a recall. But before I get a whole bunch of comments about it, this was not just an American issue. Soon after that, Canada, the UK, Cuba, many other regions ended up recalling cinnamon apple puree pouches due to lead contamination. The good news is this triggered a domino effect because more U.S. states began passing legislation to control what's in our spice containers. But as of this recording, there are still no federal limits for heavy metal levels in spices. So that's fun. This scandal became a textbook case of economic adulteration, where a lower quality product is modified to appear higher quality for profit. It's a direct consequence of the race to make cinnamon as cheap as possible. Or cassia, if we're being pedantic. And I am pedantic. It seems that throughout our history with this spice, from fantastical myths of old to toxic powders today, deception has always been one of cinnamon's key ingredients. Part 4, a modern spice. So what is the fate of this ancient storied spice in our modern world? After centuries of conflict and exploitation, the cinnamon wars are officially over, but the plant now faces a quieter, more complicated set of threats. There's the question of its survival in the wild. While the cinnamon you buy at the store comes from cultivated plantations, wild populations of true cinnamon in places like Sri Lanka are in decline. Deforestation and habitat loss are threatening the genetic diversity of these very trees that started this entire global story. While the species itself is not globally endangered, its original wild ancestors are considered vulnerable, and conservation groups are working to protect these last wild groves. Then, there's the reality of cinnamon in our homes. The quiet scandal of the great cinnamon imposter still continues. The vast majority of cinnamon sold, particularly in North America, is still the cheaper high coumarin cassia. And maybe nothing captures cinnamon's strange modern journey better than one viral moment. The infamous cinnamon challenge. This internet dare, which peaked on YouTube in the early 2010s and later resurfaced on TikTok, challenged participants to swallow a handful of dry ground cassia in under 60 seconds without water. This stunt is nearly impossible and is genuinely dangerous. A 2013 paper in Pediatrics warned that the cinnamon challenge can cause choking, aspiration of cinnamon powder into the lungs, and lung damage requiring hospitalization. The American Association of Poison Control Centers reported a huge spike in calls from 51 in 2011 to 222 in 2012, many involving collapsed lungs and breathing emergencies due to ingesting cinnamon. Medical experts have also issued warnings about long-term lung inflammation and scarring from inhaling cinnamon dust. But the consequences haven't just been warnings. In 2015, a 4-year-old Matthew Rader choked to death after ingesting cinnamon powder while his mother wasn't looking. He collapsed and died within 90 minutes, even though she said he had been perfectly healthy before. It's a brutal kind of continuity. A spice once soaked in the blood of empires is now wrapped in wreckage of viral stunts with poison control calls, ER visits, and tragic headlines marking just the latest chapter in its story. And after everything, the exploitation, the deception, the dangers, it's still here. Cinnamon's legacy is complicated, but its story isn't over. From a fossilized leaf in an ancient European forest to a sacred ingredient in holy oil, a prize in colonial war, a complex symbol in Dutch paintings, and finally to a contested spice on a supermarket shelf, cinnamon has been on an extraordinary journey. What lingers isn't just its flavor. It is a legacy of power, profit, and everything packed into the spice jar most of us would never think twice about. I'm Megan Brehm. Thank you for joining me on another episode of The History of Plants. Head over to Patreon if you're curious about the parts of the story that didn't make it in, or you just want a behind-the-scenes look at the wild rabbit holes I fell into. Or if you're craving another story about a plant that sparked wars and rewrote global economies, check out my episode on the history of tea, the plant that helped build and break empires. Until next time, greenies, stay curious and never forget to flourish.